Welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm your host, John Tanza, on this live broadcast from Washington. Here are some of the top stories making news across South Sudan and Sudan this Friday, August 16, 2024. U.S. Special Envoy for Sudan is calling on the country's military leader to send delegates to the Geneva talks.
We hope that President Burhan will send a senior staff delegation so that we can extend that mediation effort. But we aren't waiting. We are working around the clock here to try to produce outcomes that can ensure more food and medicine and security for the people of Sudan.
And some residents in South Sudan's capital, Juba, use a dump site as source of food for their families.
That's how I'm struggling. What will I do? There is no money, no work. The men have left the children to the women and children are suffering. We come here to find something for the children.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. United Nations agencies welcome the opening of the Adre border crossing with Chad, which will allow humanitarian aid to flow to millions of people trapped in Sudan. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
The decision by Sudan's armed forces to reopen the Adre border crossing comes as aid agencies race to save the lives of millions of people at risk of starvation and deadly disease outbreaks. The World Food Program calls Sudan the world's largest hunger crisis. The agency says the opening of the border crossing will enable aid to be delivered into Darfur, where intense fighting is occurring. Speaking from the Kenyan capital, Nairobi, WFP Sudan spokesperson Lenny Kinsley says her agency plans to deliver aid to the Zamzam displaced persons camp near El Fasher, North Darfur's capital, where famine was declared 2 weeks ago.
WFP is immediately mobilizing vital food and nutrition supplies to be transported across the Adre corridor over the coming weeks. We need to see trucks moving across this border every single day to get a consistent flow of aid into the region and to urgently save lives.
Kinsley says nearly 6,000 metric tons of food and nutrition supplies for around 500,000 people are being loaded and will be ready to go as soon as the Sudan government gives the green light. She adds WFP also is scaling up assistance to 13 other areas on the brink of famine. And she says WFP aims to reach 8.4 million people by the end of the year. At the same time, the World Health Organization is embracing the opening of the Adre crossing. WHO spokesperson Dr. Margaret Harris says millions of Sudanese have lacked access to health care, food, and other basic relief for months because of insecurity. She says people who are malnourished or starving are at risk of serious health consequences.
Anything that's a mild infection in somebody with good nutrition, a good immune system, becomes a catastrophic illness in somebody who's malnourished, particularly a child. And they can die very, very quickly from what might be a minor infection if they are malnourished.
The decision by the Sudanese government to open the Adre crossing followed the start of U.S.-sponsored peace talks in Geneva. While diplomats have said little publicly about how the talks are progressing, on Thursday, Tom Perriello, the U.S. Special Envoy on Sudan, also welcomed the opening of the Adre crossing. In a social media post Thursday, Perriello described the aim of the talks.
I'm here in Switzerland with diplomatic partners, and we're urgently working to produce some breakthroughs on humanitarian access and cessation of hostilities in compliance with the earlier Jeddah agreements and international humanitarian law. With over 25 million Sudanese affected by acute hunger, starvation, shelling of homes, and forced displacement, we are way past the moment of urgency for the international community to do more. We are eager to be able to also do mediated talks with the RSF and the SAF, and we hope that President Burhan will send a senior staff delegation so that we can extend that mediation effort. But we aren't waiting. We are working around the clock here to try to produce outcomes that can ensure more food and medicine and security for the people of Sudan.
A delegation from the Paramilitary Rapid Support Forces, or RSF, is present in Geneva. The head of the Sudanese Armed Forces, General Abdel Fattah al-Burhan, so far has not sent a delegation. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Still on Sudan, a medical source and witnesses said Friday, Sudanese paramilitary forces killed at least 80 people in Sinnar in an attack that followed U.S.-sponsored talks aimed at ending the 16 months of conflict in Sudan. The assault occurred in a village in the state of Sinnar on Thursday. The French news agency AFP quoted a survivor who said the paramilitary attacked on Thursday morning, opening fire, torching homes, and killing many people. Ceasefire talks began on Wednesday in Geneva, hosted by the United States, Saudi, Swiss mediators, though the Sudanese army refused to take part. Previous rounds of negotiations in Jeddah in Saudi Arabia have failed to produce an agreement to end the fighting. The paramilitary rapid support forces, which since April 2023 has been battling Sudan's regular army, captured the Sinnar state capital of Sinjar in June. Since then, fighting in Sinnar has displaced nearly 726,000 people, according to UN International Organization for Migration. Many of them had fled the war in other parts of Northeast African country. The state connects central Sudan to the army-controlled southeast, where hundreds of thousands of people have sought refuge. The RSF controls most of the capital, Khartoum, the central state of Al Jazeera, the vast western Darfur region, and large parts of Kordofan in the south. More than 10 people are currently displaced across Sudan, most in areas facing worsening humanitarian conditions as fighting spreads. Both sides have been accused of war crimes following deliberately targeted civilian and blocking humanitarian access. In South Sudan, some residents of Juba say they survive on food from the town's dump site. The country's Relief and Rehabilitation Commission says worsening economic conditions in the country has forced vulnerable families to hunt for food from wastes. Dennis Logonyi reports for VOA from Juba.
The struggle of Juba's residents' search for food is real. Some families are scavenging for food for their families from one of the town's dump sites. Mbolisha, who prefers to be known by her first name, a resident of Juba town, says the dump site has become the only source of food for her children.
That's how I'm struggling. What will I do? There is no money, no work. The men have left the children to the women and children are suffering. We come here to find something for the children. If you find something better. If you don't get it, you just go home. We go and open every polythene bag. If you get something small, you put it in a sack and take it for the children.
John Charles, another resident of Juba town, blames the government for doing very little to address the high prices of food in markets across Juba.
What is forcing us to move to this place is the difficult situation. The government doesn't even care about its citizens. How are we going to survive? Better you go to the dump site. If you get something good, you bring for the child to eat.
Santino Ball, deputy chairperson of South Sudan Relief and Rehabilitation Commission, says the country's economic crisis is to blame for the looming hunger across Juba town.
This situation does not necessarily need humanitarian assistance, but other remedies that are linked to the market intervention and so on.
Musoke Ronald, the Ugandan national who collects scrap metal from the dump site, says the demand for food has forced some families to camp at the site.
When they see the car coming, they run from the car after there and remove that rubbish. After rubbish, they see the food, they eat. After they eat, they take the children and eat like that. Over 2 days or 3 days when they avoid that thing, they look at the food and eat.
According to the World Food Program Response Plan released in June, Haiti, Mali, the Palestinian territories, Sudan and South Sudan are likely to face acute food insecurity this year. For VOA News, I'm Dennis Logonyi reporting from Juba.
Still in Juba, about 75 children and adults benefited from free cleft lip surgery at Juba Teaching Hospital Friday, courtesy of the medical non-profit Samaritan Pulse. The program coordinator for the group says the rainy season affected turnouts from 14 counties across the country. For VOA News, Juliana Shiapai reports from Juba.
Samaritan Pass free surgeries at Juba Teaching Hospital began in 2011. The group says 79 patients benefited from the free ongoing surgeries and are now able to afford a smile once again. Karen Daniels is the Samaritan Pass program manager for the cleft and palates program in South Sudan. Daniels says the rainy season prevented the group from reaching many patients across the country.
We seem to never run out of lip, and we know that these children, 1 in 700 cleft lips will be born worldwide, if you think about that. So that's the kind of incidence we're looking at. So we know the lips will continue to come.
Cleft lip and cleft palate are openings or splits in the upper lip palate, or both. Cleft lip and cleft palate results when facial structures that are developing in an unborn baby does not close completely. Cleft lip and cleft palate are among the most common birth defects. They commonly occur as isolated birth defects, but are also associated with many inherited genetic conditions or syndromes. Awadlie Lolap is a chief from Kapoita North County in Eastern Equatorial State. He brought his granddaughter for the free surgery. Lolap says his granddaughter faced discrimination due to her cleft lips.
We came here yesterday and she was immediately sent to the operation room. Thank God she is fine now, and her looks have really changed from the previous one with cleft lips. Other kids used to laugh at her, and other young girls used to irritate her, and she was always triggered to fight with her age mates.
Lokale Logi, a 28-year-old mother of four, says she left all her work behind in Kapoita South County for the free surgery.
I was born with cleft lips, and I have been suffering from the attitudes of the people in my community, and they used to call me many names. I'm very grateful to this organization for offering me this surgery now, and all appreciation to God for the successful surgery.
Bidali Justin, Samaritan Pass's National Coordinator for the Cleft and Cataracts Program, says some patients with underlying health factors did not qualify for the surgery.
Some that has a condition that beyond repair in Juba, and we have an affiliation with the hospital in Kenya that we will refund them to Kenya to have their surgeries done.
Samaritan Pass says the Juba Teaching Hospital team and the National Mobilization for Cleft Lip Surgery helped to create awareness about the free surgeries. The group says it's preparing for another free surgery event in April 2025. For VOA News, I am Juliana Shapai in Juba.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, handshake is a foreign language in some parts of the world. Find out why after the break.
Hello, listener of South Sudan in Focus. We have an exciting new segment dubbed Words of Wisdom. We want to hear your thoughtful proverbs that echo through your community. This is another chance for you to share wisdom from your roots. All you need to do is record a proverb in a language of your choice, tell us its English translation and what it means. Keep it brief, authentic, and represent your community. Your recorded proverb shall be sampled on South Sudan in Focus every Wednesday. Send your recording via our WhatsApp number, +1 202 630 8011. That is +1 202 630 8011.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. A Mandela Washington Fellow from Sudan says she was shocked at how people interact in America. She says her cultural shock in Washington opened her eyes to look at the world from a different perspective.
I am definitely seeing a big change. You know, look at Sudan. The revolution itself was led by the youth. If it wasn't for the youth stepping up and taking the mantle and saying, you know, enough is enough. Let us prepare our own futures. Let us fight for our own futures. The same thing is happening in Kenya. You see the youth are kind of leading the conversation and leading the fight. They're at the forefront of everything. And for me, the African prospect is a bright one. I see Africa flourishing in the next few years. I see Africa making strides in economics, in politics, and it's definitely going to be led by the young people, which is why I'm so grateful to be a part of the Mandela Washington Fellowship, you know, making sure that young leaders are put at the forefront of very important conversations, making sure that our voices are heard, our efforts are being, you know, valued, and the contributions that we make to whatever space that we're in are being taken into account.
And how are you going to use the connections that you've made here in Washington back home? Sometimes when you bring new ideas, they look at you like you want to bring colonialism back here after the British left.
Yeah, no,
how are you going to navigate that terrain?
You know what, that's a very difficult question, and I think that's a question that will need a lot of thought. But for me, to give you the littlest, most concise answer, I feel like I would have to be talking and collaborating with people that are willing to listen to different ideas, willing to collaborate with me, which, as I said, most of the young people in Sudan are very receptive to different ideas at the moment. Even if it's not coming from within and it's coming from outside, they are receptive. So
we are talking about the Z generation,
yes,
and the CNN effect.
Exactly. The young generation, the people that are there, the people that are fighting, you know, the Gen Zs, some millennials, you know, I'm a millennial, but I like to think that I have the same tenacity and the same fight that Gen Z do. So I will make sure that for me, the youth are the people that I engage the most. Because at the end of the day, it's the youth that will be there in 5 years, in 10 years, in 15 years, that will be leading the world, that will be leading the conversation and leading change, whether in Sudan or on the continent at large.
Now, talk to me about your cultural shock. When I first came here, my cultural shock was people don't want handshake. Because I come from a place where you have to shake hand every time, every 5 minutes.
You know what? That is definitely different, especially since we Sudanese people like to say, hi, how are you? We hug, we kiss, and it continues.
You ask
it's a
about
cycle.
The ancestors, the grandmothers, and the grandfathers. And, you know, when I came here, handshake was quite, you know, regarded like a weird
taboo
habit. Yeah, and I'm like, why? People told me, hey, come on, this thing has to do with hygiene. So talk to me about your cultural shock.
So, I think maybe because of COVID, people have become a little bit more reserved, even Sudanese people. We've become a bit more reserved, I would say, with that. But before, we were just going at it. The biggest culture shock is that Americans really don't want to have small talk. Like you said, we want to sit down, we want to have a chat, we want to, how's your family doing? How's your dad doing? No, they tend to want to get straight into the point. They're very focused people. So sometimes I found it a bit jarring, a bit different, when you start a conversation and you go past the niceties immediately into the topic of the topic of discussion. Another culture shock was the weather. It's way hotter here than it is in Africa sometimes. It's very humid. I feel like that is a big misconception that Americans have, that Africa is just so hot. No, America can get hot.
That's Yara Khalid Dahab, a fellow with the Washington Mandela Fellowship. She spoke with me here in our studios on Wednesday. As access to nature isn't just good for your mental health, a long-term study suggests that spending time in green places or by water can help prevent heart disease. VOA's Dora Mejuar has more.
City living with limited access to green spaces or bodies of water is bad for your heart, according to a study analysis from Northwestern University's Feinberg School of Medicine. Here's study author Dr. Li Feng Hao.
participants with limited access to these spaces, particularly those living in a lower economic neighborhoods, right, had higher odds of developing coronary artery calcification.
Coronary artery calcification can be an early sign of heart disease, which can lead to a heart attack. The long-term study found that the association was most pronounced in Black people living in lower-income neighborhoods. On the other hand, access to nature actually has health effects that can slow down the biological aging process, according to study author Howe.
This beneficial environment also have better oxygen, cleaner air. But I think the most important thing is to promote their social interaction to be physically active. And all these factors can promote your immune system.
The study results come as no surprise to Heidi Schreiber-Pan, a Maryland-based therapist who often conducts client sessions in natural settings.
There's so much evidence to support that when the human body is in connection with the natural world, that our sympathetic nervous system is lower, lower blood pressure. So the body responds so well to the calming environment of the bird song, sound of water, the trees.
The study followed almost 3,000 people for 25 years, from around 1985 until 2011. The study authors concluded that being outdoors often means people are exercising more, which is good for heart health. That makes perfect sense to Schreiber-Pan.
When humans are outdoors, which is our original habitat, we tend to be more physically active, is what the human body needs. So there's so many like cardiovascular benefits to that, just being more active. But then there's also all that other benefit of just the sounds of nature, water and birds, right?
Study author Howe says her analysis provides scientific evidence that it would be beneficial for governments and city planners to find ways to improve access to quality green and blue spaces, especially in economically deprived neighborhoods. Dora McQuarr, VOA News, Washington.
And it's that time we get to listen to what you think about this show. We will start this week's listener comments with a message from Reverend Jacob Cholwal Nyal from Malwal Boma, Awerial County, who writes, "It's with great sadness and heavy heart that we mourn the loss of Honorable Isaac Kon Anok and Ambassador Bior Ajang Duat at the same time in this month of August 2024 in South Sudan. My thoughts and prayers go out to the people of Lakes State and Jonglei State, especially the Aliab and the Twitch communities who have lost their beloved sons. The Bible reminds us the Lord is close to the brokenhearted and saves those who are crushed in spirit." Psalms 34:18. "In these difficult times, we can find solace in knowing that God is with us and that will comfort us in our sorrow. We are also reminded that the blessed are those who mourn, for they will be comforted. As we mourn the loss of our esteemed leaders, let us find comfort in the hope of eternal life through our faith in Jesus Christ." He continues, "Honorable Isaac Kon Anok and Ambassador Bior Ajang were great leaders who dedicated their lives to serving this community and the country. Their legacies will continue to live through the positive impact they have had on the lives of those who they touched. May their memory remain in our lives." Daniel Ariak Michael in Yei Town writes, "Hello VOA South Sudan in Focus. Since South Sudan is gearing up for the upcoming elections come December, we South Sudanese welcome any approach taken by civil society to press the government and the actors to speed up the election process. We also urge U.S. representatives in South Sudan to help in boosting up with security during the December elections." James Roy Majok from Unity State Bantu Town writes, "Hello, VOA South Sudan in Focus program. As South Sudanese citizens, we need peace rather than returning back to war. It's better for the warring parties to implement the peace agreement instead of boycotting the elections in the country, South Sudan. Isaac Hamis writes, "Hello, John Tanza and the team. The move by the international partners to initiate dialogue between RSF and SAF in Geneva is good, but the most important thing is how to silence the guns in the country, because it's not practical that exchange of fire goes on the ground and talks also moves well. I'm urging the international community to engage the two commanders battling to first stop fighting." Ayen Dak Dowell in Kampala, Uganda writes, "Dear John, to achieve total peace in Sudan, the two parties shouldn't give conditions for the talks. Rapid Support Forces and the Sudan Armed Forces should see ways of ending the conflict for easy return of Sudanese people in the displaced and refugee camps." Peter Gotch Anyang Majang Dol in Ayot from Ayot Town in Jonglei State. Right, "Dear Tanza, efforts made by Sudanese in diaspora to call for immediate ceasefire is welcoming news, and let the warring parties in Sudan accept peace to end weeks and months of fighting and displacement in Sudan. Enough is enough." Oroto, David Oroto from Torit writes, "Hello, John Tanza. I do listen to your program, and thanks to Voice of America for the good work of airing the concerns and the views of many South Sudanese. But will our government care for those concerns or the needs of the citizens? Imagine today, those in power are eating and growing very fat, yet the common poor civil servants, together with men in uniform with guns, are in terrible conditions, as they have gone for more than 10 months without salaries or being paid. Now, in this case, what would the government think will happen to their families?" And lastly, a listener who calls himself Monday writes from Torit, "Thanks, John Tanza. Dowry in South Sudan is a big problem, with the youth now going to get married in nearby countries like Uganda and Kenya due to low cost. We the poor, where will we have money to pay for dowry? Send your comments to us and we shall sample them every Friday. Our WhatsApp number is +1 202 630 8011. That's all we prepared for you for this Friday, August 16, 2024. We now leave you with the song Yamari by JJG Musica. We've been listening to JJG Musica and the song Yamari. I'm your host, John Tanza, on this live broadcast from Studio 14 in Washington. On behalf of our producer, Kwame Ofori, and engineer, Peter Hindley, we wish you a lovely evening. Remember to join us tomorrow. Remember to join us next week for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Samson, Cosi, Mato, Catolina, Latina, Tawara, Loro, Caracocorosu, Uyaka,
come.